November 24, 2020 is the Watch for Pedro show. Watt for Pedro show. Happy Tuesday. Started off with Alucha, the alternate take for John Coltrane, Miles Davis, the Joy Division song, which is the clam chowder, the California clam chowder version in the studio with Thelonious Monster. And Brother Mads Love Grotto, a couple miles south of Push Point, because we're quitting quarantino mode, but I am not totally man alone because those genius software engineers of Estonia with their Skype invention. I got with me Pete Weiss.
Oh.
Okay, from the Thelonious Monster. Are you in Hollywood?
Technically it's called, we refer to it Hollywood. I'm in like the border of Los Feliz and Silver Lake, but it's actually East Hollywood.
Yeah,
but
it's part of Hollywood.
You know, anything between, like, say, you know, La Cienega and Alvarado is, you know, in the broadest sense of the word Hollywood, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, the neighborhood, Thai Town.
Thai Town, yeah, I'm about, like, you know, about a mile east of Thai Town.
And then they'll say Little Armenia, which is kind of a lot like Glendale, though, in the valley.
It's more Glendale, but, yeah, it's like, you know, we're all living here in the same swamp. It's cool. I'm down with
I
all
I gotta tell
neighbors.
The listeners, 30 miles north of Pedro, but we share the same mayor.
We share the same mayor. I did not know that, but yes, Pedro's part of LA, sure.
You bet. This harbor is the biggest one in the country, makes him a lot of money.
And Civic pride, Civic pride.
Garcetti is actually from the Val, but he's good buddies with our councilman, Mr. Busciano. So
the crazy thing about, before, I'll just digress for 1 second. 2001, I think, we had like a little reunion, 2002, and one of the first gigs we played was at the Silver Lake Lounge. This cat we knew, who might come into the story later, said, hey, this guy who's running for office, do you want to play, will you guys play his fundraiser? It was like a Saturday afternoon, and it was Garcetti's first campaign event, right? Cut to, you know, 14 years later, Neil Young has just played in the backyard of the Paramore Estate up in Los Feliz for a benefit for the Silver Lake Conservatory of Music, which I'm one of the founders of, and Garcetti gets up there. He wings this dope, like, speech about how his kids, we adopted kids, and they went to the school, and just extemporaneous, like, you know, because he's a politician. So dude comes off the stage. I'm sitting right up front because I'm not going to be sitting anywhere else if Neil Young is doing a solo show, right? And I go, good job, boss. And so Holmes walks straight back over to me and he goes, like, starts yapping, just carrying on conversation with me. I think I alluded to, hey, if the pigs come because of noise violation, I'm going to send you out there. Blah, blah, blah. He says, they'd shut us down sooner. Anyways, Bob walks up and he goes, hey, I know you guys. You guys are Thelonious Monster. You played my show, blah, blah, blah. Are you guys still gigging? I'll play with you. It just shows you the mind of a politician. Here it is 14 years later. He still knows, like, he met us briefly, if at all, and he still can remember exactly who we were. That's how you get to be mayor of a city. Make everybody you meet feel important. All right, sorry for the digression.
His father was city attorney.
I remember that, Gil Garcetti. You know, we're the same age, so for the most part. So I think we have a kind of a shared reference, both coming from, you know, growing up here, me from the North Valley, you from Pedro. Which,
but I came here when I was 9. I'm going to be 63 next month.
Oh, you got a couple of years on me, old man. I'm only 61.
Not old, less younger.
There you go. Wiser. I'm sorry.
Yeah,
wiser.
I came here in 67, and shit, I didn't even know about shit north of Wilmington. We say Wemos, you know. So it was the movement where I learned about that I'm actually part of this city that goes from the Val to, yeah, oh.
Well, I got to tell you, it's a parallel universe because I'm in the North Valley. My dad's World War II guy. All the guys, like, bought their first homes in Reseda, and then a couple of years on the GI Bill, and they all moved out to the brand new suburbs in North Valley, which hadn't really started yet. Like, what my, you know, the subdivision I was in was, like, one of the first ones in the North Val. So I grew up, and there was, like, fields and old ranches and orange groves, which were, you know, of course, completely gone by the time I was a teenager. But it could have been Kansas for as much culture and information, you know, because there was no outlets really for us to get hip to stuff going on except for, you know, KRLA or KHJ. And then later on, KMET came on at FM. And then I'm sure we could both agree on
that. Oh, that's a good start, but because I wanted you to try to give me your earliest musical recollection, Pete.
Well, I'll tell you my heaviest. I got two, and they're both around the Beatles. The first heaviest recollection I have of music where it really profoundly affected me was when the Beatles album Revolver came out. I don't know what year that is, but I got to say I'm 5 or 6 years old, right? And we were at a family acquaintance house. I'm Jewish, so it was like a high holiday or some trippy thing like that. And the confluence of Revolver on the stereo and The Bad Seed on the TV really left an impression on me.
You're talking about that horror movie.
Yeah, well, you know, the one with the little girl, a bucket of kisses for a bushel of hugs. She kills, like, the little blonde girl. No one could imagine that she could be the killer, but she kills her classmate. She lights the caretaker on fire. The Bad Seed. So, I just, you know,
that's
probably
musical, but Beatles, definitely. Now, in the pad you grew up in there in the Val, was there any musical instruments?
You know, my sister played the flute. My brother had a snare drum. I tried to, my first attempt at playing music was the tuba in seventh grade orchestra, which I discovered something that was kind of mind-boggling to me, is that we were playing When the Saints Go Marching Home, right? And I'm thinking, oh, When the Saints Go, ba ba ba. And what I found out is that the tuba is going, oop-da, 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 oop. It's a counter. And that's like, it blew my mind. Now, that's not to say I continued on being a tuba player. That lasted half a semester. And then I think again when I was like 14, I tried to learn the bass, but I found out very quickly I have absolutely no facility for playing musical instruments. Zero. I mean, I shouldn't say zero because like over the years I learned strong a couple chords on the guitar, but as far as playing drums, absolutely was. I didn't start playing the drums until I was 23.
Oh, wow. That's interesting.
And the only reason I played the drums was because my good pal John Hook, we were film guys. Like, we were running around in the film / punk rock world, which I'm sure punk rock has a different meaning to me and you than it does to the average listener who would think punk rock is like a mohawk and the thing and blah, blah, blah. Yeah, that's not what we were about. You know, we were about the new energy and creativity.
Sure.
And, you know, rebelling against any authority that there possibly is, not being constrained by fashion stuff, all that stuff, you know. Because where I came from, guys had shag haircuts and drove minivans with wire-rimmed glasses. That was the, you know, that was the prevailing culture.
So, 26 when you jumped on a drum set.
23,
I'm sorry. Fuck, my memory is
terrible.
Yeah,
that's all right.
You just said that. Now, tell me about that incident. What got you to jump on that drum at 23?
So my buddy that I met at LACC in 1978, John Huck, and we became, you know how when you meet those people out in the world and all of a sudden they become, you know, you're glued to them at the hip, right? That's just, we had, whatever it was, we aligned. He was from Mar Vista or whatever, but, you know, it's like 77, 78 here in the city. And we just started hanging out and we'd make films together. We made a film called Get Up and Die in 1979 with the Mentors. We made the Mentors' first recording that they ever made was soundtrack for this film that we made. And it's a pretty cool film. It's got back in the day, it has tomatoes in it. Don Bowles is in it. Of course, the Mentors. Anyways, we were trying to make like a transgressive cinema and we were very successful. So my boy John Huck had a drum set, and at one point he just goes, "Here, have my drum set." So I got this drum set at 23.
It was a donate.
Oh, Jeff, I didn't choose it at all. So what I did then, I'm like, I had this like what they call a garden apartment. That's when it's like half of it's subterranean and half of, you know, so your window sill is basically at sidewalk level.
Yeah.
So I had this, so it's basically almost a concrete bunker down there. So I had this spot at Stanley and Hollywood Boulevard, and I would get down there and I would just play along to Charlie Watts and XL Main Street. I did that for 2 months. And then I was like, hey, I'm going to start a band. It's going to be called Thelonious Monster. I mean, I was on stage within 6 months of getting a drum set.
Wow. Here, I want to play Lena Horne. Still sing Stormy Weather.
think I love you, I'm just brave.
Show, yeah, that's Thelonious Monster with Lena Horne still sing Stormy Weather. Then we had Thomas Scott Quintet out of Liverpool with She Smokes Oblivious. Then Blaugeist from Bomas Prendon, Bomas. C Clamp 8 from 38 Tigers. Mike Check from Deep in the Woods, 66, Tommy O'Sullivan out of Dublin, Ireland, featuring Vinnie McCann. Do you want New Wave or do you want the truth? From Dope.
Truth. Truth.
The title of the song, Pete. Actually, it was a Minutemen song that Dose
covered. I do that. Yeah, I do that.
You knew that. Echo Ishibashi after that with a refrain. White Noise, My Game of Loving. This from the 60s, Darbra. Delia Derbyshire, incredible electronics music pioneer.
Doctor Who.
Yeah, you know.
Oh, dude, I know all about Delia Derbyshire. She was a tripper.
She cut up tape and, yeah.
She was just on it, like, day one. She's like, you know, you go draw the line from Delia Derbyshire to, like, Kraftwerk to, like, everything you hear on the radio.
yeah, absolutely. I'm glad you possess such wisdom, man, Pete.
Thanks, bro.
And knowledge. My Game of Lovin' from from White Noise, that project she was part of. She was also something, St. George Roos, and I've been playing some of that too. But she stopped making music because she didn't like synthesizers.
There you go.
Anyway, Midwife after that with Name, and finally Teenage Wasteland, Thelonious Monster. So, 2 months of playing drums, and you do your first gig?
I do my first gig after about 6 months. Well, the thing is, like, actually the reason that the band, I actually got a band together was that I met Flea on the set of Suburbia. I was the boom guy. I was working, me and John Huck was the sound mixer, and I'm the boom guy, John Huck again. You know, he's responsible for everything. That's how I became a boom guy, because John Huck was the sound mixer. And so I just, like, me and Flea became, like, immediate fast friends, like, again, like you do with people. And I went and saw, I guess, what was the very first Chili Pepper show. It was the first one that they actually kind of did at the, it was at the Rap Beat Funk Off at the Café de Grand, put on by Wayzata de Cameron and Gary Leonard, present. And I was there, and I realized immediately, because I've never been swift with the chicks, you know. I mean, I'm all right, but I just got too much brain going on to, like, actually just, like, be one of these guys that, like, oh, dude. Anyways, I'm not good at that stuff. But so I was at this Chili Pepper gig, and the very first gig I realized, like, these guys are going to be huge. I'd never seen anything like that since the Weirdos, the amount of energy on stage. And if I don't, like, I'll be backstage hanging with them, hitting on their chicks like a scumball, which I can't really do. But maybe if I start my own act, I could generate my own action. It worked.
Now, this gig, was this the fashion show?
No, this was a...
okay, because they did a fashion show, too, and then they played with the Minutemen at Club Lingerie.
So we were probably there back in those days.
Yeah, because we were at one of their first gigs. But I remember them, Anthony and Fleet, telling me about some fashion show that they did. Because actually it was a side project. The real band was What Is This?
Right, exactly. Yeah, they had done some, like, one-off shit at the Rhythm Lounge, where it was like Tony Flo and the Majestic Pimps or whatever the hell they were calling themselves. So the reason I know this was the first show is that I had this flyer from it that was just, for some reason, I had in my crib. And at some point, Flea had written bad poetry in the back of it. And about, I don't know, 15, 20 years ago, I came across this thing. And I go, oh, my God, I got to give this flyer to the Flea. Because, it, you know, it's from his, you know, I don't care about ephemera. I'm not that kind of guy. I'm not a collector. And then he told me, oh, that was our very first show. And I was like, oh. And then, of course, he lost it. But whatever.
Right. It was kind of a fun thing to do with their roadie friend, Anthony.
Because I think the first time I saw the Minutemen, you guys were opening up for X at the Roxy on a Thanksgiving.
You're
that
right.
Makes sense?
That's the first time we got to play the Roxy.
Yeah, dude. I was there. It was cool.
And we had raced home to Pedro because we got a gig. It was very hard to play here. Croatia Hall and maybe 2-3 songs. They blew us off. So anyway, let's get back to your story.
Sure.
So what was that drum set? What kind? Do you remember who made it?
Premier.
Premier. So.
So I'm not a guy. That,
no, but Premier is like, what Keith Moon is saying on Cella. Premier drum. Premier
right.
drum.
English drum set. Little. It was like a little kit. I've never like. I'm not like a guitar player where I could tell you about like my favorite humbucker or how I like my setup. I'm always been like. Whatever drum set's there, I'm going to play that drum set because that drum set's going to make a sound and I will attune to that sound and then I'll know how to, you know, to beat on it to get to achieve the sound that I hear.
Look, Pete, you're a real pro. You know, if you go back in vaudeville, you know what the main philosophy was, work the room.
Well, that's the deal. Thelonious Monster never had a set list, ever.
Well, set list might be part of work in the room. Everybody's got, but to being flexible enough to work on any gear, I think that's a righteous philosophy and asset.
I'm just not
do you
good
remember,
enough to
can you tell me, I mean, you're telling me about the first Chili Pepper gig, but tell me about the first Thelonious Monster gig.
First Thelonious Monster gig was at a loft in downtown Los Angeles, and I don't know if it was on a Halloween or not, and it was just, you know, our... Originally, we were as much an art project as we were a rock band. It was just like this crew of characters Like, we didn't set out to sound like anything. We didn't have a template that, like, oh, my God, we're going to be a power pop band, or we're going to sound like the Stones, or we're going to be a punk rock band. It was just like these really vivid characters all in one little group in a at the beginning in a democratic situation, and we just go for it. So it was more, you know, that used to be our tagline was, it's a party, it's a monster. Like, we weren't precious about our performance whatsoever. Like, if you were there and you had the temerity to jump up on stage and bug out or blow the horn you brought with you or do whatever, God bless you, dude. Go for it. Like, we're not, it's not a set thing that we're like, oh, my God, you're going to, like, mess up our deal. It was just like, blah, you know. That was the feel. So that was our the first I guess official gig, and then the next gig that we played was at the
No, but you didn't tell me about the gig.
I can't remember it. I just remember flashes of
that's
color.
That's a good reason. That's a good.
I couldn't play to save my life in those gigs. I just banged as hard as I could.
Okay. How long? Can I ask you this? How long did you guys practice for that first gig?
Oh, we probably practiced for, you know, a few months, because none of us really knew how to play our instruments. It wasn't until we started adding, like, a surprise to us, like, really quality musicians. Like, I think the first gig, I think KK was in the band, KK Barrett, because he was playing guitar with us. We had four. Well, Dix wasn't there yet. Dix was in Europe, but you know, at the beginning we had four guitar players just because we just like, hey, you want to play? Sure. Hey, you want to be in the band? Sure. We didn't care. We had four guitar players, whatever. Let's go for it.
So you practiced. So you knew this gig was coming up. You had months
to
get ready.
Oh, sure. No, we were going to be a band. It's just indeterminate what kind of band we were going to be.
I'm just wondering, so, and KK, I got to tell the listeners, he's drummer man for the Screamers.
And, yeah, like Randy of the Metro Squad and Academy Award nominated production designer.
Well, he got into, making sets and stuff for Hollywood and stuff. But with the Screamers, there's some news up in the city in San Francisco, Superior Viaduct's going to put out that
Screamers. I saw that.
That demo, yeah. Did you see it?
Yeah, I saw that. I guess, you know, the only news would be is that they'll probably clean it up. They'll probably did like mastering and a whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
So it sounds better.
There's never been an official release, you know, because records were over. Look, Pete, it's end of the first hour, November 24, 2020 edition, Wild Peter Show. Special guest, Pete Weiss. Hold tight for hour two.
My idea for her wedding gift was have a commission Tomato to do my portrait. And so I went over to Tomato, do my portrait. Because Bob and Anthony used to live over on Hollywood Las Palmas in a Palmer building, and Tomato lived there too. So that's when I became like more familiar with him back in 79 when we did the.
People should realize that Tomato DePlenty was also an artist.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
He was an artist.
That's right.
He wasn't a singer.
But
he was an artist that expressed himself.
You know what? There was a lot of mixture between in the early days of the movement between all the disciplined and undisciplined art expression.
Right. There was no.
I should start off the second hour.
Okay.
November 24, 2020. It's the second hour of the Watt from Pedro Show.
Woo!
Together as it's coming apart, falling behind.
Trump, taking questions from the press. The things you said made it clear you're more unhinged than ever. A charming, incoherent, rambling mess. Yes, indeed, the inner workings of your muddled mind were right there on display for all to see. And with every disconnected phrase, you made it crystal clear. The White House ain't the place you want to be. So don't let the door hit your ass on your way out of the White House, Donald Trump. Hurry back to your gold-plated penthouse in the sky. We'll just put this ugly episode behind us and pretend it never happened. So be a good boy, Donald, run along. Say bye-bye, time to say bye-bye. Even you yourself must know this is all a big mistake. Beneath that yellow hair, you got a head full of little loose screws. We're talking about the office of Abe Lincoln and Obama. What a crazy idea to think you could fill those shoes. Don't let the door hit your ass on your way out of the White House. not very nicicle. I'm not like an icicle. The buzz of my icicles. The point me dead on a bicycle. It's not very nicicle. I'm not like an icicle. The buzz of my icicles. The point me dead on a bicycle. I shout it out loud. I'm wearing a shroud. And I float on a cloud. I'm not proud. But I keep it nice and neat. And I keep the receipt. My body's good to the street. Incomplete. Hey! If they come to Stonehenge, I'll turn up as a ghost and make toast. But I'll make it slightly burnt and the stomachs will churn. And then they listen, they'll learn, and then return home. It's not very nicicle. I'm not like an icicle. The poison my icicles. To find me dead on a bicycle. It's not very nicicle. I'm not like an icicle. The boys on my bicycles. To find me dead on a bicycle.
listening.
I'm saying that for cats like me and you, the guys who started the original punk movement were probably 3 or 4 years older than us.
Yeah.
Or the kids that were our age grew up in the city itself. There was like, I was like from kind of the Hinters. You were kind of like from the Hinters a little bit.
Yeah, yeah.
So what we got first was kind of the ethos, right?
Right.
So I think that's why like cats like us kind of held tighter to the ethos, because we didn't get hit by the fashion first.
Right, right.
We got hit by like, you know, this is what it means for punk rock. It means, you know, work outside the boundaries, fuck authority, do whatever you will. There are no rules. Most importantly, be passionate, be honest, and be truthful. Period.
Right. So you could have somebody who was a painter be a singer. There's no problem with that. Yeah, I think originally Tomato of Seattle, part of that Tupperware stuff. With the mentor guys.
Cockettes and the whole thing, yeah.
Yeah, the mentor. Yeah, Cockettes. Yeah, I should tell people, we heard start of the second hour with Falling Behind from Thelonious Monster. Then Don't Let the Door Hit Your on the Way. Don't Let the Door Hit Your Ass on the Way Out of the White House, Don Trump, from Sam Bennett in Tokyo. Waku Waku Kingdom with Medicine Man, Dead on a Bicycle, Mint Douche. And finally, Hang Tough, some live Thelonious Monster. So, the four guitar thing, how long did that last?
What's that? Oh, and, you know, it lasted till KK got, he had a wife and life, so KK kind of just drifted off.
Rudy.
And then we were down to three guitars. We started our second album, and there was some problems with the guy Bill Stobow. He played a 12-string. He had a lot of, he was really a guitar player. Again, he was more of a sound collage with a 12-string attitude guitar guy. And, you know, what happened with us is that we're like this, kind of like this free-flowing joke or whatever. But because we had these personalities and these artists and, you know, whatever, we actually kind of had some cool ideas. But you throw Bob Forrest into the mix and you've unleashed, you know, baby Trump as far as like a person who wants to. And don't get me wrong, me and Bob Forrest are as tight as hell. He's my brother. But I'll talk shit about him all day because he'll say it's the truth. You know, he tells me every day, I'm sorry, I'm sorry, I'm sorry, I'm sorry. But he, you don't know. This is an interesting thing. Maybe you can relate. When you're coming up and you're just a junior doing this thing, you don't know who's got an agenda and who's just natural free flowing through the prospects of living their life. There's a lot of cats, unbeknownst to us, that kind of, they wanted fame and they wanted to be big and they wanted to amass celebrity and things like that. I didn't at all. I was, you know, I'm completely unfamiliar with those desires. I'm not saying they're good or bad or different, but so Bob started massaging us more into a, like, you know, a classic rock act, whatever. And like, I was more than happy to go with it because it was just like, oh my God, I can't believe I'm like, you know, we're playing bands and, you know, we've never really been represented, well on recordings due to, you know, for most of our career, we were always seen as an afterthought. Like, oh, second record. First record we did was with Brett Gurewitz. We were the first record he did at West Beach Recorders, and it was like the first real release for Epitaph. Second record we recorded it in the Chili Peppers rehearsal room at EMI Studios, right? Third record, John Doe stepped in, but then they had to anyways, the point is we never actually had a producer or pre-production or did any of that bullshit. We just kind of get in there and wing it, you know. Most of the songs were written with me and Dick Stenny just in a room and me identifying some riff that he'd done and like, play that over again, and me trying to, you know, figure out something. You know, that's how it went. If that
it makes total sense, Pete. I want to play La Divorce.
You killing me, baby. Better put this in the bed.
Pedro Show, it's not blood divorce, it's L.A. divorce, people, and Pete's got a disclaimer. I was doing an interview before this, and I couldn't think of that word disclaimer. Thank you, Pete.
Oh, well, yeah, that's part of my vocabulary. Point being is that on this new record, one thing that people got to understand, again, talk about afterthoughts. We hadn't played in 16 years, right? Our original guitar player, Chris Hansen, who always had like one foot in, one foot out, like he'd make a record, then he wouldn't do the tour. He was always hedging bets, right? He got his degree while, you know, he'd stay home and go to college and we'd go out on the tour. So he moved off to France and blah, blah, blah. He finally moves back to the States. About a year and a half ago, he gets this, you know, I want to be a rock star again. I'm tired of being a suburban dad. I've been working on some songs. So, you know, I've been burnt by Bob so many times about starting projects and we'd like, write an entire album worth of music and Bob wouldn't show up or whatever. He, you know, screwed us over. So I'm like, listen, I'm not making a phone call on this thing. I'm bringing a pair of drumsticks. You tell me where to go. There'd be a drum set there. Lo and behold, Bob gets us. We go over to Klinghoffer's, a rehearsal space, and Chris shows up from out of town. Dix finally relents. And we had 8 4-hour writing sessions. Chris splits town. 3 weeks later, there's a couple of days free at the studio Josh is recording at. Let's go track. Me, Martine Lenoble, and Dix Denny and Bob went down there and tracked 8 songs. And that's like, that's what this new album is. And then later on, I'm playing poker with my friend Mike Semple. And he goes, Pete, what's going on with that record? And I go, I don't know. None of my business. And he goes, like, I want to try and mix a song. So, let's get the hard drive from Bob because he had a studio or whatever. And me and him went in there and started working on the song called Get a Gun. And then Josh came down and Bob came down and we liked what was happening so much that those guys are like, dudes, you finished the record. So a song like L.A. Divorce, it was a really bad disco jam. And I'm not having bad disco, like, cause it was just a thought in the studio. So what happens is that we go ahead and we replace the bass part. Hence, I got a really fussy kick drum in that song that I'm
got a weird noise there, Pete.
What's that?
Weird noise, like you're banging on some shit.
Oh shit, it must be my headphone. I'll stay still. Must be my headphone jack. Sorry about that. Anyways, I just wanted to make an excuse for the busy kick drum pattern on that song.
Okay.
But that's Xander and Mike Semple trading off guitar licks.
Yeah, now, you mentioned Josh Klinghoffer. I had him on the show to talk about this new record. But talk about when he comes into the band, because I had him and Bob on both at the same time, and it seems like they hit it off good.
Well, it's Klinghoffer's like the, it's this weird thing. Like when you're coming up through life, things just like, oh wow, that happened, this happened, whatever. But when you get some years back and you look at what happened in retrospect and you actually like have some perspective on what went down. So, the famous story is that, we met John Frusciante through D.H. Poligro because he used to jam in Dickie Rude's little garage over on Sierra Bonita and Hollywood Boulevard where the Two Free Stooges were born.
Two Free Stooges.
I got to
do some gigs with that. Look, we're at the end of the second. We're going to have to continue this. We will, Pete.
Okay.
It's the second hour, November 24, 2020, this is Wap Pete Show. Special guest, Pete Weiss. Hang tight for hour three. November 24, 2020, it's the third hour of the Wap from Pedro Show.
Thank you. shining radiant smiles. Sitting by the creek that runs through the front yard. Water is pouring out of an old garden hose, and the kiddie pool's filled. The children's laughter rings through the hills. To witness such joy, it rolls back the years so far away. The bears come at night and dig through the trash cans. Can't walk barefoot round here, cause the prickers around. Jumping on the trampoline and climbing the trees, this could be paradise. The children's laughter rings to the hills. To witness such joy, it rolls back the years. Too far away, too far away.
For Pedro Show. Before I tell you what we started the third hour, let me tell you what we finished the second hour off with. After L.A. Divorce, this Home Truth from Papier Tigre out of France. Bollywood Apologetics from Black Wing. Huma with Aragonico, Sea Level, Stomp, and finally Disappear for Lonely Smile. Monster. And then to start this third hour, Union Street. Baby, you've been bumming my life out on Supreme Fashion Studio 5 version, of a studio version. And then, not 5, what the fuck's wrong with you, what? Thelonious Monster. Then Best of Wasted Space from Wasted Space. Thank you, Craig. If I call this spiritual jazz, can I sell it to hippies? That's brand new from Bronze Age UFO out of Baltimore. Pussycat and the Dirty Johnsons from England. Beast Way Out. And finally, the Far Away from Thelonious Monster. And we're going to continue Pete Weiss's story of the Josh Klinghoffer addition to the Thelonious Monster Band.
All right, so we're at Dickie Rude's, and Frusciante's playing it. So I started Two Free Stooges with Dickie and Manny, came up with the name, and I've actually played drums with them for the first, I don't know, 4 or 5 months until I got busy doing my rock thing, and they whatever. So anyways, Frusciante shows up at rehearsal, two songs in. I realize this is one of the greatest musicians I've ever seen in my life. You just got to think of, put this, like, look back at this. Here I am. Whenever I sit down behind a drum set, unlike a lot of people, I am playing to my max peak potential. I am so untalented behind the kit that I am just having to go for it just to maintain any kind of credibility whatsoever, right? And all of a sudden I'm playing with Dix Denny. And so Frusciante joins the band for, you know, I got a call that night from Flea. Dude, we were thinking about John for the Chili Peppers. I'm going, like, God bless, blah, 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 blah. You know, and so anyways, John was from Granada Hills, California, and Bob met him through his girlfriend's brother. And then Josh, Bob met from his same thing. And he grew up in, you know, 15, 12 years later, he's living almost in the exact same neighborhood doing the exact same thing. And so when you look back at it, like, what are the coincidences that all these people – kind of like, you know, you get these little formations, like, man, like you and D Boone just happened, and George just happened to be like in this crucible, and you guys gravitated, and the next thing you know, you look back at it, and it seems so, you know, of course that happened, but when you really look back, it's like, that's just, you know, a miracle that those, you kindred souls collected in the same area, right, and sparked on each other enough to like, hey, we're going to join ourselves in life on this journey together.
Pete, you hit the nail right on the head. That's exactly. Like, it's hard if you went backwards. How in the fuck?
Right.
But then in a way, maybe that's the only way it could have been.
Right. It's just like, right, you know, right. Out of that chaos, like all the little the nuclei or whatever that are attracted, the protons, all like form into a little cluster.
Sure.
And the next thing you know, you've got this cluster, you know, and we were just fortunate, you know, you and me both, of coming up in a town that, you know, my philosophy on why all this shit went down in L.A. and why there's such a legacy happening here is like, you know, people understand that are like younger than us that back in the day, like the 80s, dude, I did not have a job. I didn't have any money. I didn't have to. I bought a beater car. You know, you could crib for no money. You could still get a dollar burrito. There was no cell phones. There was no, like, cable. There was nothing that you had to pay for. You could drive across town. There'd be no traffic. There was, you know, no, there was just nothing in Los Angeles. It was wide open, right? And that's why all these artists got to, like, really become fruitful here, because they didn't have the onus of having to, like, buy into the system and get over. You could just kind of, like, step out on the side and go, like, fuck it. I'm just not dealing with all that square world shit at all. I don't have to. There's not this, like, you know, monetary gun placed at the back of my head that I need to, like, you know, if you're not a materialist person.
Yeah, it was, yeah.
And that's how all this ferment happened.
Yeah, you're talking parallel universe.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, I want to speak of what you just said. Buy another gun.
The girl can't fall back that you wear the school. But things is still bad. No one listens to you. Hashtags never gonna save a soul.
kids and run off to Spain. You know, there's just one kind of favor I'd ask you. There's one kind of favor I ask you. There's this is one kind of favor that I'll be gone. I'll be gone. You see that my grace kept coming. When that two rider horses in the fall down the town. There's two rider horses, they follow me from town to town. There's two rider horses following me. Simple, because white men created me and wrote me in a book and made me into a religion that makes everyone believe that there is such a thing as right and wrong, and you can't judge your neighbor, and you can't do eye for an eye, and you can't go build bombs, and you can't go kill people in the name of God. So I say, fuck you, Jesus, I realize now what it was talking about. I say, fuck you, Jesus. I say, I know what everybody's talking about. I say, fuck you, Jesus. I don't need you to save me at all. Fuck you, Jesus. I don't need you to save me at all. One day my heart heart's gonna stop beating and my hands are gonna turn cold, oh.
For Pedro Show, last music for this edition. Thelonious Monster with Buy Another Gun. Model Home from D.C., Every Sense I Got. Thor Harris and Joyful Noise Players, brand new. Kindest regards, Mr. Mapfumo. And finally, something live from Thelonious Monster. See that my grave is kept clean.
That's a corker.
That's a corker.
I got a question for you, Mr. Watt.
Bring it.
Being from Pedro, whatever, and you working in the part of the scene that you were in, what was your take on Thelonious? You must have been somewhat aware that we existed,
yeah,
correct?
Yeah, of course.
But what was, because the weird thing is, I've seen in a couple reviews recently and this, that, and the other thing, we were so closely associated with the Red Hot Chili Peppers that I don't think anyone ever really knew that we were 180 degrees different prospect completely than what they were doing, right? We were just, effectively, we're a punk rock band, 100%, right? Absolutely. Yeah. Not stylistically, even though we can work the, you know, we can, you know, our boat, we can drop that, our boat in that sea and, like, you know, make it to the shore. But on the other hand, like, I'm just curious, like, what was your take on what we were doing?
You guys, we always thought punk was not a word for style of music. It was more of a state of mind, and the style of the band was up to each band.
Correct.
That's, and we thought Thelonious Monster had a Thelonious sound. I could tell you guys from just a couple chords.
It's the first time, I think, that we've ever had an actual producer, and that producer was me, and I did it with my buddy Mike Semple, because what happened is that when you go, like, we didn't have time to sit with these songs, right? What you hear on this record is probably the first time these songs were ever played from start to finish, right? That's the first, like, in fact, there was a song called 16 Angels where I just said to Martijn, like, what do we do at the end? And he goes, I guess we just go for it. I'm like, all right, we'll just go for it. So we had so little time that this is the first time that we kind of manufactured the record, like, in a studio for the most, you know, in the post-production. Because when you sit down to, when we're sitting down to play, everybody at that point, we haven't sat with the songs long enough. So everyone kind of had a different conception of what was the song was really supposed to sound like. And so I played drums to what I heard in my head. And now what you hear on that record is the song, the record that I was playing drums to as much as anything else. And whatever limitations I have as a drummer, that's kind of like the record. You know, I think
you did great, man. I like this record a lot.
Oh, cool. It sounds like me, you know. That's the deal. In fact, they were
pretty, you know what Popeye said? I am what I am.
Exactly. Well, like I say, that's like, you know, but one thing I have fortune, although I'm not like, I don't practice, I hadn't played drums effectively for 10 years, maybe then sitting down once or twice by myself. I've played with other musicians for, you know, ages. And that's what I heard in my head. But I have the...
Can I ask you this? Is there another Thelonious Monster record planned?
No. Is there one written? Yes, from 10 years ago. Look, I saw this one kid reviewed us. Like, you know, I get off on reviews because I want to see if they understood, like, that's what I was going for, that kind of I don't care because I don't care what people think about me. I'm old enough to where, like, your opinion of me does not move my needle in one direction or the other, right? I am what I am, like you say. But the guy, a couple of reviews have said, like, this was a much hyped and anticipated record. And I'm going, like, by who? I don't have the greatest facility for it. And I just feel fortunate that someone with such limited abilities got to, you know, the musicians I've played with in my life are just staggering. The like, cats like yourself or whatever. Like, you guys are real musicians. And the fact that Rob Ritter, chose to be in a band with me and be a rhythm section with me, that's not lost on me, man. I feel honored, my friend.
You'll get back on them drums, I know. People, it's been the November 24th, 2020 edition of the Wild from Pedro Show. Keep your powder dry.